afternoon.
Howdy.
There we go.
How you doing?
First of all, it was too loud, then I couldn't hear anything.
Oh, no.
Can't win. All right, you're joining We the People. In progress.
Always in progress.
The progress is we're trying to get our guests connected. You know, Skype's a great tool, but if you can't log into it, then it's not a good tool.
It doesn't work very well.
So, my name's Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
Bob would be over there in the struggle. See, we'd be over here on the viewing side of the desk, watching the struggle continue. So today we have kind of a, I don't know, it's not really a different show other than shows we've done before, but it does come with a 49-page playbook. So if you can
follow along.
If you've just been starving for a playbook, today's the day. It's playbook day. It's a bad playbook, though. You're not going to like it.
You're not going to like what it says.
No. So it's the playbook to, quote, take out Trump, published by Media Matters. You know, I really thought those guys were just boobs. I didn't know they were out there doing anything.
Oh, no.
Frightening.
Oh, they are organizing.
I know. Bill's got like a whole page, a giant page of notes. So we're on here with, at some point in time, they're both on the phone, but eventually we will be joined by Dr. Lyle Rapacki. And he is a private sector intelligence, behavioral analysis, and threat assessment specialist. So since June of 2010, Dr. Rapacki has provided select members of the Arizona legislature intelligence briefings on border security and threats to Arizona sovereignty. I have a lot more information on him and all of his credentials on the web. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. You can also, if you're joining us on Sunday between noon and 2, you can jump into the chat room here at KCNR, and that link is also on our page. And the actual link, if you want to go to it directly, is kcnr1460.com, and navigate your way to the little chat thing there. You can ask questions back and forth, and we can get them to you, you know, get them answered for you on the air if you don't want to call in. And let's see, if you know anybody who has some ideas for shows or guests, or you've read some cool books lately and you'd like to hear more from the author, get a hold of us. All of our information is on the web. Emails, phone numbers, all that good stuff.
All that stuff.
So wethepeopleradio.us.
We are available.
We are. We're really public, too.
Yeah.
And you know what? Never get prank calls. Isn't that weird?
I get a lot of hang-ups.
I was going to say, you might have a lot of hang-ups. You know, Dr. Rapacki's a behavioral.
Oh, well, maybe we can, talk after the show.
Yeah, we can have a little look in there. And then our other guest that's going to be on at the same time, somebody's on the phone and somebody's on Skype, maybe somehow that's going to work out, is Mark Fincham. And I'm assuming that's how I say his name because it's just like it's spelled. And if that's not it, he's going to have to help me.
Did you talk about what we're going to talk about?
Teensy bit.
Oh, okay.
But I was talking about the people who are going to be talking about what we're talking about. Is that okay?
Okay, that's fine.
I should make you do this part.
No.
You're just like over there. You're all age. You do this part. Born in Detroit, Michigan as a youngster. Youngster, that's a word we don't use enough. Mark and his family lived in several Midwest cities, including Kalamazoo, Michigan, where he graduated from high school and attended Western Michigan University. He is, I'm skipping ahead here. After relocating to Tucson, Arizona, Mark joined software maker Intuit, working in the small business accounting division. While advancing through the company to senior manager, he earned his Six Sigma Green Belt rating. I don't know really what that is. He'll have to decode that for us. I think it's good. And led the Tucson-based product registration and business products unit. And 2007, he left Intuit and pursued self-employment. This guy's done everything. He's been there and done that. And now he is in the Arizona legislature. He is Representative Mark Fincham now. So how are we doing?
So
I can check some of these facts with the people who would be.
We do have Mark on the phone.
Nice, Mark.
I've never had anybody say nice.
Nice.
When I was on the phone. That's a nice feeling. Thank you.
We're like, oh, good. We can stop just making this up as we go along. I did link your blog and your websites, both of them, and so people have access to all your good stuff. But yeah, I know. So you're District 11 in the state of Arizona, and you guys have a House of Representatives. In California, we have a assembly. We're the assembly. We don't have a house. Different jobs.
That's correct.
Yeah, which is screwy and confusing for people. So how long have you done that?
Well, it's the whole point. Yeah. They want it to be confusing for people.
That's right. So they can't figure out who actually represents them or what they do. Tell me this. In the Arizona House, how long have you been there?
I am midway through my second term, and our terms are 2 years. So I've been seated for about 3 years.
Okay. So you've been there long enough to know that either it's going the right direction or it's a train wreck. How's Arizona?
Yeah,
it's got to be better than here.
I think I've got a relatively good understanding of where state politics are, where they're headed if we're not careful. I think that's a fair enough statement.
Yeah. You guys have it more together than the California guys by a long shot. So good for you. You can probably actually get things done there.
Well, and what was really interesting is they hooted on us for 8 years talking about secession, and now all of a sudden California is wanting to secede. Okay, so what changed? Oh, the guy in the Oval Office.
Right.
I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Well, and the...
So, interestingly enough, we ran a bill this past session that was a bipartisan bill that essentially appealed to the more sane people among us that it doesn't matter what party's in control. It doesn't matter who's sitting in the Oval Office. It doesn't even matter if it's a man or a woman. There are certain things that no party, no body, like the state legislature, should put up with from the executive of the United States. His power was granted by the legislatures and by the people. And because of the massive attack on the government education monopoly on kids from kindergarten all the way through 16 years of education, they've somehow come to the belief that we're a democracy.
Yes. I hear that all the time.
So if you can't use the right words, that tells me that either you weren't paying attention in school or you had a really stupid teacher.
Well, I think a lot of it is just they don't teach it anymore. They don't want them
they
to
don't know
how
the difference between democracy and a republic the time.
I absolutely disagree. I think that we are facing a concerted effort change the national body politic, and we have been since the 30s.
Well, that's. I think we're saying the same thing.
There are a lot of people who don't know the difference, and they're easily played. But I do think, I think you're right. There is a concerted effort to make everyone believe that we are a democracy. Geez, look at last November.
Yeah, and forgive me, I didn't mean to come off so strong, but I think
go
that
ahead.
All right, I'll forgive you.
The conventional wisdom out here right now is that it's a word. Hey, you know what? Words have meaning.
Yeah. You say it enough times, and pretty soon it's true.
Well, that's why green and red have two different meanings in a traffic signal. So if those who are empowered to teach can't teach correctly, complete and accurate, I picked that up when I was at American Airlines for a little while. If you can't be complete and accurate about history, if you can't be complete and accurate about civics, you have no business being in the classroom. None.
Look at the, I was watching we saw a little blurb on the news. They tried to tear down another statue because, instead of Russia, 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 now we have statue, statue, statue. So they were trying to tear down a statue, and it was a guy I had never heard of. And I thought, I wonder how many of those people even know what he did in the Civil War. I mean, they probably had to have somebody tell them he was actually in the Civil War.
Right. Oh, then they also...
I would love to see them tear the statues of Lenin down for the Russian Civil War.
You know, there was discussion about that as well on the same broadcast.
But
there were a whole bunch of our kind of guys that were.
Yeah, so we'll during your show we'll probably talk about that a little bit, the hypocrisy and the the attempt to draft a narrative, which quite frankly, I think is falling on its face.
People are tuning out
on its face a little bit.
Yeah, do you find that people are kind of tuning out a little bit? But just because it's just like a never-ending onslaught of craziness.
Yeah, with any psyop, there comes a point where you have message fatigue.
Oh, there you go.
And I think they passed that message fatigue. It's kind of strange. because I have not done drugs myself, I have no idea that this is so, but I'm told by physicians that the first time you receive morphine is the most potent experience you will ever have with a medication, because it physically changes your brain chemistry. And the next time, it will be less effective. And the time after that, less effective. And the time after that, even less effective. So, I'm not a doctor, slept in a Holiday Inn, but.
Yeah, there
Not a doctor. But I am told by physicians who I trust and who I think are probably correct that as time goes by, messages in the brain, whether they're from a drug or from somebody whispering in your ear or yelling in your ear, those messages become less and less potent to the point where it's, okay, yeah, thanks, whatever, and you move on.
Right.
That's what I mean by when I say that many Americans live their life about 6 inches in front of their face.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is we have become so bombarded from the moment we wake up to the moment we close our eyes at night, if we have the good fortune to sleep soundly, we are bombarded with these messages about what we should and shouldn't like, about what we should and shouldn't support. And generally, there is very little fact that is associated with those messages. That's one of the reasons you see message fatigue. And in the psychological operation that I think is being conducted in America, has been for many years, that's what we're seeing. People just tune out. Now, the rabid, the people who are most emotional,
yes,
are the ones who are going to get sucked in. Those who are rational are going to say, well, wait a minute, that doesn't even sound plausible. So it's always going to be the battle of the emotional versus the rational. And when you hear about, well, we need to impeach Trump, it's the emotional people that haven't gotten over the fact that somebody took their candy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, and still.
Okay. Hey, you know what? You got an election in 3 years. You are spending all of your energy on turning off the people you're hoping to appeal to. So keep up the good work. I don't want to point this out to the left.
You know, it's funny after.
I don't want to point this out to the communists.
I don't know if it would help them.
Well, no, I think it would, because I think they read into that pretty well. But you know, reading this Democracy Matters playbook here, that very point kind of struck me a little bit. Was they are employing all these tactics. I don't know when this was written, but so much of this. Isn't working, and I think it's having the opposite effect with people. I think they're tired. They're tired of hearing this drumbeat over and over again.
Well, I mean, they're making jokes about it. Literally is like
trouble. Yeah.
Russia, 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 statues. You know, I mean, what's the next thing we're gonna do?
Right.
And have to be hysterical about. But I'll tell you.
Well, I think you raise a very good point, and that's what I'm talking about: message fatigue. People, the longer you put, I don't know, the Six Sigma folks talk about the monkeys in a cage. Mm-hmm. One of them gets a banana. They all get bananas, and they all get hosed down with a wet hose. They don't like that. Well, the next time they get a banana, they all get hosed down except for one of them. And then the next time, one of them gets a banana, and they all get hosed down. The very next time that you give the monkey the banana that has caused them to all be hosed down, they attack and kill the monkey with the banana.
Yikes.
So it's psychological training, and that's what we are watching in the classrooms of our lower learning institutions, our K-12 institutions. I mean, when we have a book by Howard Zinn that is the communist view of how America was formed and what it's done over its years, as the number one selling textbook in American history classes, and you have the College Board aligned to that with college entrance exams, what the hell do you think you're going to get?
Yep.
I'm challenging school boards across America to get off their ever-loving arse and look at the books that they are putting in the classroom. And if you really want to screw with a kid's mind, you don't belong on the school board. You belong in the Communist Party headquarters for your local community. Politics in the classroom have absolutely no place. Are we on the air yet?
And there's a... We're still on the air, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're definitely live.
We've got Lyle.
We've been on the air for 15 minutes.
Where is Lyle? And do we need to take a quick break? Can we...
We can take a break, yes.
We're having Skype problems.
I thought this was the pre-show conversation.
It is. It is. We just shared it with everyone else.
A few million people.
Yeah, yeah. What's the problem? All right. Hold on 1 second. We're going to take a really swift break, and then we'll come back. Hopefully we'll have Lyle, and, you know, we can just keep going, because it's just going to be like this the whole time. This is how we're doing it.
All right.
If you've joined We the People. Obviously, we're having some technical things with connecting our guests, but hey, what's new? Stick with us. Well, we forgot to invite the guy who would have been stuck in the middle. We don't have any middle here. You're listening to We the People. Okay, so we're here with, I think we have Lyle Rapacki with us. Do we?
We do. Can you hear me now?
Ta-da!
Hey, there's Lyle.
Ta-da! So much for that whole Skype idea. Sorry, I sent you down a blind alley on that one.
I've taken the last 25 minutes Skyping in.
It's so
been a great
quick.
Show so far.
It's so quick. It's just electronics, right? Oh, my gosh. Well, we had a nice chat with Mark, and we forgot to make...
Well, you have the better of the both of us anyway, so there you go. I can hang up now.
We forgot to actually tell him we were on the air, so... We didn't actually say anything bad, though, so... You can listen
I'll
later.
I define bad.
Well, bad's when you push the button and then you have that station identifier that rolls for 7 seconds to cover up whatever it was we said. Yeah.
Well, I won't have to say oops about anything. So
we've actually only had that, I think, one time. It was really fun because you never know what people are going to say. And then Bob was like he was like a Venus flytrap. It's like, you know. Okay, so I think at this point we've got the playbook here, this Take Out Trump playbook, posted online for people who want it. You can find it at wethepeopleradio.us. Look for the show on the 20th of August if you're listening at a different time. And I don't know, Lyle, we haven't heard from you yet. What do you think the overarching thing is with this, since you're the one who sent it out in the first place? That's why I have it.
Power. In a word, it's all about power. The Dems are out of power. They thrive on power. All they put together, all they do, everything that they work toward is to gain power. And actually, when they had power, that wasn't enough power, so they needed more power. I mean, I can play this into an oxymoron, but that's what it's about, power. Saul Alinsky, who all the modern-day Dems are followers of, taught very clearly that morals are irreverent or irrelevant, and his driving force and what he taught was to use any means available to you to gain power and to maintain power. And if that means you have to show or say a few things to the downtrodden, go ahead. But your end game, your goal, is to achieve and maintain power. you obtain it, you keep it, and you defeat anyone who tries to take it from you. That's really it. And the show's over now.
We're all done.
That's pretty much it.
All right, back to Mark.
And,
he was chattier.
I think people like Representative Finchem are going to be feeling and seeing this juggernaut if they haven't already, and I believe they have, because while there's been so much attention at the national level, for the first time in a long time, or maybe at least in modern history, the Democrat Party, which is really a form of a communist party, but we don't want to say that because it's politically incorrect, has now worked its way into the states, counties, and city levels, like city councils, county supervisors, things of that nature. Historically, they've been focusing on the national. This time around, and with that 49-page playbook and a couple of other playbooks that are out along the same lines, demonstrates is they have reignited their base to go after for power at the local or state level as well as the congressional level. We're seeing it in states where even in safe districts, legislators are now having an opponent. Historically, and Representative Finchem would speak into this far, far better than I can, having been an elected official, they are now seeing people come forward who, in one sense or another, may not ever have a chance to win, but because they've been propped up and they're going through the motions, it is causing extra monies to be used. It's
yeah.
causing platforms to come forward by which they can espouse their beliefs and to ignite all sorts of emotionality that even though it won't translate into votes in the ballot box, it puts them on the map so they can continue their work in the off-season, if you will, or in the non-election year.
Well, it gives them
some power.
It gives them huge influence. I mean, when you read that document, it's really a fascinating look at how they plan on retaking their influence over the internet, over, you know, like you said, state, local,
over
federal
governments. You know, the one that got me was Facebook, too.
Facebook,
here,
Google.
Here, I kind of thought they had Facebook locked in.
Well,
and
yeah,
they're
but
trying
you,
to...
Well, you look at if you're able to control the content and yeah. and the you know what's being said there, that's pretty big power.
So I'm and a bit of a contrarian, not. As you've heard in the first 15 minutes. I think that what the and let's go back and talk a little bit about this the idea that this is a psyop. This is a psychological operation that's being run by. Some very powerful, very wealthy communists. Yes?
Oh, yeah.
Communism is not about helping the worker. It's about seeing to it that the elites get to live in the level of comfort they've grown accustomed to. And that their narrative is many people don't buy it. So I question whether or not there really is that much influence. We have this tendency, we in the republic form of government have this tendency, conservative types have this tendency to look at left, right as this, somehow this linear equation, probably because we have a left hand and a right hand and somewhere in the center we all get to meet together and clap, I guess. What we have to understand is, and I saw this classic case of this is what happened in Charlottesville. I have absolutely no doubt now, and I think that this has been, for the most part, confirmed by Colonel Allen West. Both sides were the same side. This was a contrived event uh-huh. for the media, because the media has, we no longer have journalists, we don't have reporters, we have actors with scripts, who parrot the words that they've been told to parrot based on the events of the day. Now, you didn't hear anything about the prayer meeting that happened in Charlottesville.
No.
But you heard about Unite the Right. Okay, I'm a conservative, so for somebody to say you're far right-wing, Mark Finchem, I don't buy into the linear equation of politics. I think what we have is the three-dimensional battlefield, if you will, where there are a number of skirmishes, and quite often two groups that essentially want the same thing are firing at each other. I think that's what we saw in Charlottesville. You know, take aside the idea of taking down a monument to a traitor. There's no question that Robert E. Lee was a traitor in the classical sense. But he also believed in something that they lost the war over secession. That was one of the two things. The spark was slavery, but the idea was secession. They believed, Southern states believed, that they had the right to withdraw from the Union if they disagreed. And until 1865-ish, there was a question as to whether or not that was true. So the spark that caused the skirmish, if you will, in Charlottesville was actually between two groups. I'm not going to say left, right, middle, communist. Two groups that are seeking the same thing, and that's to elevate their cause using the media to some end that many of us can speculate on, but they know what their end is. So they're basically playing the media. But the media is so willing to be played, that's kind of the point. It's media. It's not news anymore.
But don't you think a lot of the actual players that were involved in that didn't really know they were actually being played?
Well, you've got the 1% who are running the operation, and then you've got the 99% who are what Lenin called useful idiots.
Yeah, that's what
I'm saying. So you've got this battle that goes on between the emotional and the rational, and a handler will always look for the emotional people in the crowd, and those are the people they play to. Because the rest that are there basically are social lemmings. One of them jumps over the cliff, they're all going to go over the cliff.
Yeah, true.
Right.
So you're building inertia. It's a classic psychological operation. You draw in the people that will be the voice, and then everybody else is going to follow because, after all, groupthink is what we do now. It's no longer critical thinking. And what I find preposterous is we've got colleges now that say, well, bring your kids here and, you know, we'll teach them critical thinking skills. Or better yet, we have Common Core, which has been foisted upon us, that the whole point of Common Core was to teach critical thinking skills. When in reality, what they're actually teaching is groupthink.
Mm-hmm.
Consensus. Tolerance. People get this notion that tolerance is somehow a good thing. Tolerance means putting up with something you don't really particularly care about, that you don't like. So the operation, or the difference between tolerance and intolerance, they're basically the same thing. The true opposite of tolerance is appreciation. I appreciate the cultural differences of other people, and I think that's one of the reasons that I'm able to talk to other people and actually get things done instead of standing on a soapbox and yelling at the world and being wholly unproductive.
Let me pick up on a theme that Representative Fincham said. It was the psych ops, the psychological operation. We know that over the last 6 months, eight months, 9 months, that the communist and the Marxist groups have come together and are well-funded, well-organized. They even have training camps where they practice these types of protests, confrontations. We also know now that there are companies, literally, if you will, businesses, that recruit young, impressionable, and like Mark was talking about, people who have no critical thinking skills whatsoever. They're crowd think, they're crowds, they're sheep. And they'll pay them $25 an hour plus some form of housing, tents, and some food. But $25 an hour, and they'll bus them or ship them in one form, airplane even, into these communities that have been designated to bring this disruption. In that sense, Representative Fincham is also talking about something that's very sophisticated here, that both the right and left, if you want to use that, and he and I don't much anymore, but if for the sake of this discussion, the left and the right, they really do appear to be more in line than you would normally think, but that's because they're being recruited by the same groups and they're being put there by the same groups, and they're being used by the same groups, because the greater goal is to bring such disruption and dismay that it disrupts and brings crises to the Trump people. You got to keep it focused here, that whatever the emotional issue is of the day or the week, it will be changed by next week or the week after.
Yeah.
The idea is to continue some form of emotional discord, disruption.
That goes along with the concept we were talking about, message fatigue.
Okay, good. Yeah.
The longer a message is out there, the less people pay attention to it. Okay, so you have to continually feed the beast with a new crisis, with a new confrontation, with a new something in order to try and keep that up. What is interesting to me, I don't think the majority of Americans embrace violence.
No.
And it seems to be the tool that the front, I will call it, whoever make up that front that want to challenge the Republican form of government in this nation, whoever that is, whether it's communist, fascist, whoever they are, that front doesn't really get that the American people are not down with that. Now, their little group might be down with that. But the idea is to draw in a skirmish, is to draw in your opponent, and then to outflank them and somehow create something that might be newsworthy that they can point to and say, you, President Trump, you bad guy, you didn't come out and say the right words in order to impugn what just happened.
Yeah.
It's all
yeah.
contrived. And I think the majority of Americans are brighter than that.
I don't know.
They see it for what it is. So there's a great book out there written by Frank Peretti called This Present Danger, a Christian book, but it walks through the story of a town that is facing this exact thing. Metaphorically, of course, it's drawing in all of the forces that are here to rob, steal, kill, and destroy. And it shows that there is this present battle of those realms playing out right in front of our faces. But the bad guy always loses. That's what we have to remember. Another good book I'm reading, Newt Gingrich's book on understanding Trump. There's a sentence in there that just really caught my eye, and he said, no matter what happens, I plan to win. Okay. I think we have to keep in focus. The bad guy always loses. He might win for a short period. He might win a skirmish or two.
Yeah.
But in the grand scheme of things, the bad guy loses.
But what you said earlier about the violence is key, because that's what gets the attention and swings the conversation over to a new topic. If you can create a situation
until they're found out.
Well, then they just create another.
Yeah, they just morph it to something else.
I mean, we've got, you know, we just keep jumping from topic to topic here, and the media are just useful tools. They jump with them.
You make a good point, but at some point, people get off of that train because they say, "Hey, wait a minute, this is like the 12th time you've jumped things. I'm starting to think that maybe you're just out there causing mayhem and." And they fall off.
Some people do
that.
And
you notice the number of people that are at these specialty events, is what I'll call them. These are not people that particularly, I don't think, you've got people that are particularly interested in establishing a communist America. They're being paid to do what they're doing. Now, there are probably true believers within that group. But what I'm saying is, their message is not embraced by people who are interested in the four pillars of what I represent, and that's quality education, personal freedom, economic security, and a debt-free future. If you ask the people on my block in any town in America what matters to them, I just told you.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't tune into violence. They don't want their kids associated with it. So we still have, at the very basic level in our nation, people who abhor violence. And the rest of them are outliers, and we got to remember that.
I think, you know, Mark, you and I have talked about this, and so have other legislators and other elected officials. One of the problems I think we're seeing is that conservatives are taught as children to obey the laws, to obey traditional morality, and they're not prepared for the debate that's taking place. It's not even a debate. They're not even prepared for the arguments that are occurring today. They're taught, conservatives are taught, don't tell lies, respect the ideas of others. We're all God's children. Do unto others
be
what
nice.
You want them to do unto you. So we're following a set of beliefs and moralities that the other side doesn't even have. Alinsky and his followers, and I'm going to tell you, the Alinsky, if you want to study this stuff, go back and study Alinsky, because that's exactly what Obama studied. That's what Hillary Clinton so proudly based her thesis on. And Bernie Sanders has been a lifelong communist, but nobody wants to talk about that because he's more of a socialist today. But these are all communists, and I think Representative Finchem alluded to that if he wasn't very clear. But they are following and the power that comes with the Communist Manifesto, where the conservatives are being more polite, more kind. They're turning the other cheek when they're named things and called things. Well, Trump's not doing that, and they don't know how to handle that. And so the focus is really switched to Trump to not only neuter him, but to absolutely cause him a form of character assassination, if not worse. And the groups that are coming together, most of them do not even know why they're there, as Representative Finchem said. They're being paid. They're impressionable. They're a bunch of sheep. There is not critical thinking because we don't teach that anymore in our universities.
You know where we see this, and we've seen it before.
Where?
So if people don't understand the national political, if they're not grasping this because you're not seeing it in your local area, if you live anywhere where the environmental fringe has come and taken over, the spotted owl is a, there's lots of examples, but that's just one I can point to. So here comes the whole thing about the spotted owl. All the stuff they were talking about was fake. So people in the timber industry, people who lived in the area, they thought, well, this will never work because they're not even telling the truth. And it rolled in like a freight train, mowed them down,
right.
And left them standing
right.
there wide-eyed and jobless. So here comes the environmental thing. Well, it's widely known that once you're too crazy to participate in environmental fringe groups, you move on to animal rights. And so I look at this whole thing and I'm like, the last 8 years we've been looking at the environmentalist version of the left acting out. Now we've moved on to animal rights. These are the people who throw blood on people and that kind of stuff. I mean, that's always been a crazier subset. But the bad part is what I'm seeing at congressional town halls in our area is that even if conservatives do attend, most of the time they look at it and go, I don't think I even want to go. But if they do go, they're totally silent. And so then it's portrayed that, 200 people or 500 or 1,400 or whatever the venue will hold, are there opposing Representative so-and-so, but a lot of them maybe weren't. They just were quiet, and they just don't know
right.
how. I mean, I'm hoping in the next, little bit of this, maybe
we can give
people. I
think we've gotten better
people
about presence. Now we have to get better about voice.
Yeah.
And there's something that I've come to call the soapbox syndrome. I don't know if it's going to have a book or not, because it'd probably be one chapter, but you may recall, let's talk about March of Dimes. And I'm not saying this to vilify March of Dimes. By the way, I understand that Jerry Lewis passed away.
He
this
did
morning.
Too, it's, so very timely. Hang on for that, Mark, 1 second, and let's do one short celebration of capitalism here before the top of the hour.
Absolutely.
We could call
unseen
it
profits. Go.
Go, retailers. All righty, we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. You can join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We were going to lose half of Hollywood.
The Jets on the tarmac. Get
on
board.
Still there.
Yeah.
Ugh. The Rosie O'Donnell syndrome. I'm leaving. Oh, except for I forgot to do it. Okay, so if we don't get to the playbook next hour, Bill's going to blow a vein. But
okay. Well, I wanted to put a very short bow on what I was about to bring up.
Yes,
and that is
do.
The idea that all of these organizations, you know, the Wild Earth Guardians and
Center for Biological Diversity.
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah.
Notice that on their they come out with these fundraising things. They, you know, button to donate. This is about a fundraising thing.
Yes,
that's all this is. And they will invent something just to raise funds. Now, one of the things that I'm asking the Arizona Attorney General's office to take a look at in Arizona. It is a felony to raise funds under false pretenses.
Good thinking.
I'd just like to know, are they raising funds making false claims? Because if they are,
well, look at
by definition, they are creating a fictitious environment to raise funds.
Well, geez, Mark, look at the Humane Society of the United States. For heaven's sakes, less than 1% of the money they raise goes to animal shelters. They have nothing to do with animal shelters.
Right.
Well, the problem
people
is
don't know that.
The second half of that is you have to have somebody that will actually go after and prosecute the violators. And we seem to have a problem in this country now with actually investigating and prosecuting people that break the law. It doesn't seem to...
It depends on the state.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. We live in a state where we decided to let all our prisoners go and turn all our felonies into misdemeanors. And we have a crime problem, huh? Yeah. Who could have seen that coming?
So there's a big surprise. Now, Arizona's got a little bit different solution to some of those things. But you had a question. You wanted to talk about the playbook. So let's talk about the playbook.
Well,
we just want people to know what they're looking at.
If people read this and understand who the players are and understand what their tactics are, they'll understand where all this stuff's coming from. I mean, you can immediately identify it when you see it. If you read this and understand their tactics,
I think that's true to a certain extent. But Lyle raised a very good point, and that is that we have been conditioned over generations
to be nice.
Yep.
The extreme organizations that represent communist ideals, Marxist ideals, anything that's antithetical to a true Republican form of government where people do have representation and people are the legislature, anybody who is in that world, they don't care. It's like the guy who walks in to rob a 7-Eleven. He doesn't really care that it has a no guns sticker on the door. It doesn't apply to me because I am not living in your world.
Right.
Right.
So we've got to get past that piece. And it pains me to know that the vast majority of people who are critical thinkers, who have their values based in an objective moral standard, they view these skirmishes as something to engage in and then go home. Because why? Because they work for a living. Their life is not revolving around advancing a communist or a Marxist agenda. Their life is around making sure that their kids got clothes, they got food on the table, roof over their, all of those things.
Right.
So we've got to get past this idea that you can go to a skirmish and then go home. And there are people in communities. I think one of the things we really need to do, which the playbook is a great start for us to identify, how do we teach counterinsurgency?
Mm-hmm.
How do we take the narrative that this group has crafted and turn it right back on them? Great case in point. When Hillary Clinton came out and started talking about how the Russians did it, and these guys did it, and most guys did it, and pick another.
Don't forget the Macedonians. I love them.
There was the perfect opportunity for, and I actually used this, break out the tinfoil hats. That far right wing conservative group is at it again, mocking her. Who's got the tinfoil hat on now?
Mm-hmm.
So when you start to understand that you're engaged in a skirmish that you cannot let, and I think this might have been what you were going to on the playbook, you cannot let a single narrative go by, while at the same time you also got to keep your powder dry.
Yeah,
you've got to wait until they fully develop their narrative, until you find out where the chink in the armor is. Then you can exploit that and say, well, okay, so who's wearing the tinfoil hat now?
Well, right. And for the folks who don't, you know, who don't live and breathe this stuff, I guess it's just important to let them know that this isn't a bunch of random things. Because people, I don't know that a lot of people realize that because they're not following that closely. And the more annoying it becomes,
right,
the more they tune out, which makes it all seem like, wow, the place is just blowing up. We will be right back. Speaking of blowing up, we're going to have a 5-minute celebration of capitalism plus some news. Sorry about that. It'll probably be bad news. You're listening to We the People. Join us online. WeThePeopleRadio.us. Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name's Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Busy Bob Martin.
You have been busy today. Now that we got everyone in the proper slots, though, it's much simpler.
Oh, yeah, we're flying now.
You can always find us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Got our phone numbers and our email addresses and all that good stuff. And happy for your input on guests and topics and things you'd like to hear more about as things go. Here we go. Scrolling backwards here so I could give accurate information about our guests since they're both on the line. We've solved our problems of the earlier hour. We have Dr. Lyle Rapacki with us. He's a private sector intelligence, behavioral analysis, and threat assessment specialist. And he has a fun resume. I would encourage you to read the rest. I will not do that to you. And then we have Mark Fincham. He is, got to scroll back to the top here. He is in District 11 in the state of Arizona House of Representatives. So for those of you who live in a state that has a state assembly, they are a state House of Representatives. And Mark's been there for 3 years, so he's halfway through his second term. And I'm sure the joy of it all is overwhelming. Because elected office these days is so great.
The recognition alone is just...
I know, and people just revere their elected officials.
All right.
They just revere their elected officials. There is so much deference being given to
public adulation.
Yes, public adulation. That good one, Bob. So in light of that... We've got this. I emailed this out. Okay, so let's kind of go back to the beginning here. Lyle, you sent me this 49-page George Soros playbook to take out Trump that was published by this Marxist attack group, Media Matters. You know, I always thought Media Matters was like, I thought we scoffed at them and moved on. I had no idea they actually did anything. And if you read the playbook, they're running the world. But it was written by them, so I got to take that with a grain of salt. But when I emailed this out, I got a huge response from people. They wanted to know more about this. They wanted to know more of what they should be looking for, how they could counteract some of this. And the fact that, I mean, I think everybody knew there was going to be a fairly organized opposition to President Trump when he was elected. Obviously, the not Trump people, whether they were pro-Hillary or not, is kind of immaterial at this point. I mean, they just have been rabid. So how far down the pipeline do you think they are on this little plan? I mean, so far it's been kind of chaos, so I think they might be winning.
Well, the playbook is one of two that I've uncovered. I'll send you the second one after the show today, and you can post that also. The second one I sent Representative Finchem will recall. I sent it to elected officials maybe 6 months ago, 5 months ago. And it also details pretty clearly how they intend to move all the way down to the state and local levels and not just focus on the national level. Again, the issue here is power and their loss of power.
Right.
So what can they do? What do they have to do to regain power? It's almost like an addict. And really, whatever it takes, and this is very difficult for most mainstream Americans to understand, we're growing up in a moral society. These folks have compromised their moral code for an anything-goes code to gain power. I can give you a word picture. It would be like the addict who is on his way down because he doesn't have his next fix. What does he have to do to get it? Anything. Where does he go? Anywhere. What type of behavior does he commit? Anything. Because what's all important is that fix. For the Dems, they're not even Dems, for the Marxists that have taken over the Democrat Party, what you're looking at is power and the loss of power. So what do they need to do? Whatever it takes to gain power. That means lie, cheat, steal. It doesn't matter. And even when they're caught in their lies, and take a look at how many of them have been caught, it doesn't really matter because they have enough support through what we've all considered mainstream media and the journalistic societies to continue their ways. So our society has undergone a rapid change in the last 8 to 10 years, maybe and we could argue longer. And this change is not good at all, and we're playing catch-up. The conservatives, the people who still have a moral fiber, are playing catch-up to a group that has no moral fiber and is only concerned about power. If you take a look at this playbook, it's broken into four parts, and it talks about media matters being one, American Bridge being another, The Crew is another, and then Share Blue. These are four groups, if you will, within the same confine, and they're broken down to provide specific information, specific actions to those who are out attempting to gain seats in offices, be it city council, county supervisors or commissioners, and state legislatures and governors. So Media Matters is doing all it can to bring misinformation, disinformation to the forefront and to offset anything that's considered conservative or nationalistic
for America's sovereignty, American Bridge.
And I might add to that, each one of those organizations has a separate function.
Yes.
So, for example, American Bridge. And we first learned of American Bridge the first day I entered the political race 4.5 years ago. There are these kids that would show up with video cameras and just start videotaping things, particularly at a Republican legislative district meeting. And, you know, because I'm an intelligence guy, I'm looking at these kids and I'm saying, hey, does anybody know who this is? And, of course, everybody was oblivious to their presence until they were pointed out. And they said, well, the one young man, I'm with American Bridge. Okay, so what are you doing? Well, I'm recording a meeting. Okay, this isn't a public meeting. Oh. And they're cordial. They pack up their things and leave. Well, there's two things that go with that. One is that they're recording what you're saying. And the other thing is it's intimidation.
Mm-hmm.
It's subtle, but it's this, I'm recording you, and we're going to hold this against you if you dare to stand up. So
but they're doing that.
I want to make sure people heard that, Lyle, because I think it's an important piece.
And
to
if
the
I could,
that's
Mark,
crazy.
If I could, if I could build on what Representative Fincham just said, he's running for office, but now he's in office. He's a legislator. They're still showing up to his events. They're still recording, and they're actually very fine if they get found out and kicked out. That it doesn't matter to them. Because what they're looking for are those sound bites. What they're looking for are those recorded portions, 30 second, 10 second, 15 second, that they can bring back to now a fairly sophisticated operation and splice and then put out on the internet or wherever they can get it. And it shows Representative Fincham, I'm using Mark as an example, it shows a state legislator who's unfair, uncouth, unkind, whatever they want to put, name him, and shows that they have the ability to go after both elected officials as well as candidates that they no longer see as anything other than enemies of their position. And they will do and stop at nothing. They'll do anything it takes to embarrass a legislator or whomever, and create such conflict that now that legislator, instead of running and proposing his platform, is having to defend
against
his actions. Right, and so what you have here is a playbook that, as Representative Fincham talked about, is broken down in four parts. Each part is interacting, working together synergistically, but they each have their own defined areas. And
well,
this,
here,
to me, is pretty important because I have not seen, now maybe Mark has, I haven't seen this level of sophistication in the Democrat Party ever. They've usually been disarrayed, but they've really come together over the last 2, 3, 4 years, I would say.
Well, just for the people who've never heard of American Bridge, which is probably most of us, says they were established in 2011. They're the political research engine of the opposition. So they intend, this is their writing, will cement itself as the standard bearer of opposition research, build on its role as a progressive clearinghouse for information that drives the narrative of Republican office holders and candidates, and be at the epicenter of Democrats' work to regain power starting in 2017 and building to 2020. So that's
so notice,
their job.
Notice the two words used together in what you just wrote, progressive and Democrat.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Progressive, whenever you see that word, you are talking about the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people may think, they're progressive Democrats, progressive Republicans. No, 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 no. Progressive is a word that has been co-opted by the Communist Party because it's not as offensive as communism. It's not offensive as communist. It. Who would be against being progressive? I mean, that's
right.
Moving ahead.
They have an insurance company, for heaven's sakes. They've got to be good.
There you go.
Bernie,
to the point of this, when you got enough money to buy everything, you can do things like that.
Bernie Sanders has been a lifelong communist. That's not my opinion. Read his
his platforms. And yet he ran for the presidency, as Mark was saying, as a social progressive.
Yeah.
So it sounds better. I mean, he's a social sure. progressive.
But obviously, yeah. you know, free everything. I mean, who needs a better platform than that? Then elect
well, he's
me.
Got five free houses.
Totally.
You know, work for him.
You elect me, everything's free. It's fantastic.
Yeah. On the share, one another aspect of this four, these four groups, you'll see that the crew, for instance, another segment of these four groups, they're looking for any damaging information that they can use against Trump. Well, look at what they've been doing for 8-9 months now. That's all. They've been probably the busiest out of all these four groups here.
Yeah, I think so too.
They're bringing up anything they can and embarrassing Trump. The idea there, and part of the idea that you'll see throughout this 49-page manifesto, is to delegitimize the Trump election and also render him ineffective.
Right.
If he's not able to put his program into place because he's always playing catch-up or defensive, then that's good enough for them. They're looking for a holding pattern to keep him ineffective until the midterm elections, which is about a year and a couple of months from now. So if they can render his program, his agenda ineffective, if they can show that he's really disconnected and he really is not meant to be president, he's in over his head, then they will feel that they've won, especially if they're able to bring people into the city, county, and state levels and win back a lot of the local political areas where they've lost.
But Lyle, it says that they're America's nonpartisan watchdog.
Yeah,
they're not.
Is that a lie?
Nonpartisan ethics watchdog
well,
group.
Nonpartisan
okay, so
ethics.
Slow down just a second. They can claim that ground because they are working for the communist ideal. They're not working for Democrat. They're not working for Republican. So in that sense, they can try and make that case. Kind of twisted logic, but it's, if you think about it for a moment, in their minds, they don't care what party gets done what they want to get done. They don't care if it's the Republican establishment. They don't care.
Right.
That's a great point.
That
so
is a
in
good
that
point.
Sense, I suppose they could be considered nonpartisan.
They might be nonpartisan.
Well,
right,
if
we
you
gotta,
look at one thing we need to look at.
Capitalism one more time.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, let's go to their senior staff on all these organizations.
Yeah, that's exactly
that tells
where.
Who they are.
Every time. All right, we'll be right back. Darn it. This is going faster than we thought. Time is speeding up. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted. Two kinds of people in this world, winners and losers. I lost my power in this world.
Heard that one in a while. Thanks, Bob. Okay, so
I wonder if I could follow up on something, if that's okay with you.
Okay, go ahead.
Mark made a really profound statement in so far as saying that it doesn't matter if it's the left or the right that's showing up on these protests. It's all being run by the same people. That's absolutely true. Similarly to this playbook, you've got people who are not Democrat or Republican in the traditional sense of the word. And as we've all grown up, we've learned that, well, they're Democrats and Republicans and maybe some independents. Well, that's no longer the case. You actually have people who don't subscribe to either of those. They have evolved or they've learned somehow, some way and taken on a philosophy of Marxism, and that's now in both, quote-unquote, political parties, but also throughout our system. And that's what you're beginning to see emerge, is a belief system, an ideology that is vastly different than merely Republican or Democrat. I will even say progressive. Marx is correct. Progressive is just code for communism. On our college campuses, here's something that I've been monitoring for about a week or two. There's beginning to be chatter as schools are getting going back into session. There's going to be riots on our campuses, just like in the 60s, and that's coming up here. So you're hearing it first here. And part of the reason is because the students, who again are mind numb, they're not taught any critical thinking. They are basically following through what they've been taught as victimization. Instead of mm-hmm. being taught virtue, they're being taught victimization. And so now they're going to go out and they're going to act out on this victimization. And you're going to see this on the college campuses. This playbook is going to highlight that. It's going to show all of this in its ugly color, because this is going to be one more event or series of events in multiple cities, just like we saw in Charlottesville, Baltimore, Seattle, et cetera, where the narratives, the media, is all focused on the event and what's being tossed around on the streets there. And the focus is taken off of productive agendas that the Trump administration may want to put into play, like tax reform, economic reform, things of that nature that would help our entire country. That's not going to be covered. What's going to be covered is all of this rabble-rousing taking place. And now you're going to add to Charlottesville and all these cities, you're now going to start to add campuses. And so very systematically, very sophisticatedly, well-funded, well-organized, groups are going to be dispersed throughout the country, already have been, who will bring forward a message of victimization, and they will just shift the title from blacks and the Civil War to something else. You'll just see it shift, but it's all victimization, and it all has to be wiped out, and it's all because of the conservatives or the people who have run America. That's going to be the narrative. And so it will be
one of the ways that's being manifest is we're seeing, I never believed in my life I would ever see somebody demand for a racially segregated college campus. I just never believed that I would see that again in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Yet you have these organizations who are, who claim to represent black students, who are making these demands, but you don't really know who they are. And it's all based out of this divisional politics, this very divisive, yep. I mean, that's, I forget which one of the rules, it's the Saul Alinsky rule, divide and conquer. That's how they do it. So that's just one way to manifest what Lyle's talking about, this victimization. Why would you want to have a segregated college campus if it wasn't for anything but victimization?
Right. And so that everybody can feel bad, you know, and of course, white people, they're the worst. They should feel bad about everything.
Well, it's a form of emotional puppetry, if you will. And what we have are no longer individuals having been taught critical thinking and standing on moral ground. So it's easier to take an entire cross-section of a population that have been dumbed down and are mass-oriented, and make them emotional puppets. And you just bring forward the proper emotional button to push, be it racial issues or whatever, and you prime the masses and you turn them loose. And again, you've got people who are being paid to help promote this nationwide, and they're not Republican or Democrat, though
no.
Some may appear to be conservative, and that's what you saw. And especially in Charlottesville, I think in Baltimore and these other cities, it was just an outgrowth of what you saw in Charlottesville insofar as the riots taking place. But we have a breakdown in our society, social structure. We have a breakdown in our moral structure. And I think you're going to see more of that coming. You're going to see more of that on the college campuses this fall. And that's going to be part of the narrative that's also being promoted by this 49-page booklet.
It's, you know, I had this really annoying conversation last week. I had several, but this one was particularly annoying. And it was over the phone. And the guy asked me, well, what did you think of what happened in Charlotte? And I said, well, I think when everybody shows up with clubs and masks and stuff like that, nothing good's going to happen. So you're in favor of white supremacy. You support the Nazis. And it was like, yeah, that's exactly what I said. That's completely what I said.
Those things. See, it takes a very twisted mind to come up with that conclusion.
Every answer.
And my favorite question when somebody does that is, okay, walk me through how you got there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And they can't.
No. This guy was every single, he goes, so you think it's okay to have Nazis? I said, look, what I think is I think if you had a handful of Nazis that were marching around by themselves and nobody else showed up and nobody listened to them, that's the old tree falling in the forest and nobody's there. I said they become pretty ineffective. But when people show up and cause a big thing like that, they get tons of airtime. So I don't really understand how that's silencing them. I think that's actually giving them a platform. And he goes, so.
Well, if you examine that situation, there was an expectation for violence.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because you had police officers in riot gear there. Okay, so if you've got two groups that are expected to clash, immediately people's radar should click on and say, all right, who's manipulating this situation? Because spontaneous protests, as we saw in Benghazi,
yeah, right,
don't just happen. Nothing in this arena happens serendipitously. Yeah. This is almost always planned, very carefully scripted.
And the Daily Caller did a really good job of actually mapping out who was where and what happened. And they literally pushed the Nazi guys towards the other guys, crammed them all in one small place where it all blew up. Gee, who could have seen that happen?
Law enforcement took it in the shorts in Charlottesville. In other words, they were highly criticized for not doing their job. And a couple of days later, one of them came out, and I've got a copy of it here. I can send it to you after the show. One of them came out and said, enough, basically enough. We've stood by. We've taken it in the shorts. That's not a quote. I'm just paraphrasing. But now we want to say something. We were told to stand down. We were ordered to stand down by the mayor and by the governor. And the groups that Mark, Representative Fincham's talking about, you're talking about, you're right. They were highly, if you will, identified. They were on separate ends of the street, if you'll allow me that, or neighborhoods. But they were ushered. They were allowed to come together. They were allowed to come together. Law enforcement directed them, much like you would have an usher in a theater directing you.
Yeah, they pushed them into one tiny area.
Law enforcement has come out. They came out and finally said all this. They were silent. They took the hits emotionally in the papers and otherwise. And finally they came out and said, wait a minute, we were under orders. We were under orders by the commander-in-chief, which is the mayor, and then the commander-in-chief which for the state, which is the governor. And the state police of Virginia have now come out, and they claim that the governor lied. And that's a pretty strong statement when you have a state police claiming a governor, that's their boss, lied. And that's what they just did. They came out publicly and said so. And so what we're having here again are political individuals who are using a situation and manipulating it to accomplish in part what's taking place in this 49-page booklet here, which is to bring such chaos that it takes the narrative, the conservative, the Trump narrative, off the front pages and moves it completely to the side. And now you have all these crises, which basically shows that Trump's out of touch. He's not able to manage these things, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's all part of creating such civil disorder across this country that somebody else has to step in. Who is that somebody else? That's what I'm waiting to see.
Yeah. Forward. We okay. need to take a really quick break, but when we come back, I'd really like to know from you guys, because, I mean, unless you were completely captivated by what they were talking about last week, I kept thinking, what would have been a response that would have actually worked, right? Besides saying nothing, and saying nothing didn't seem to work, and then saying more made it worse, but I'd be curious to know what you guys think. We'll be right back in 2 minutes, have a little celebration of capitalism, and you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Ebony and ivory live together in perfect harmony, side by side on my piano keyboard. Oh Lord, why don't we?
Times spent now, people do the poker.
Dominance.
Submission.
Radios appear.
This New Year's Eve was the final barrier.
Dominance.
Submission.
Radios appear.
We took you up and we put you in the backseat.
Dominance.
Submission.
Radios appear.
From year to year, we looked up for the venture.
Dominance.
Submission.
Radios appear. Dominance.
And that's why we take breaks.
Submission.
So we can find out what music Bob will play. That's the whole point.
Submission.
Submission.
All right, I forgot where we were. I got all carried away with the music. Men?
Like Ebony and Ivory.
Yeah, yeah, Ebony and Ivory. I could hear Lyle laughing all the way here. I could hear you from Arizona.
Thank you. Hey, just again for the record here, after the show, if you'll give me a little bit of time, I will send you, and I'll send Representative Fincham, these two reports. One is titled Democratic Virginia Governor Caught Spreading Charlottesville Lie, Police Step In. That's the title. And the other one is Charlottesville police themselves come forward. We were told to stand down to ignite race wars. I'm going to send you these two reports so you can make your own decisions.
Bad day to be a policeman. So, okay, last week, obviously hindsight's a wonderful, wonderful thing, but at the time, so you're advising the president and all this, you can see where the train wreck is going. What's the good answer to combat this stuff? That was very, an excellent illustration of what I would have picked as the first choice. Say nothing.
Well, I have some great answers, I think, but let me defer to Representative Fincham, who is an elected official.
Yeah, what's the right answer? What's the right response?
Yeah, let's say it was you, Mark. What would you say?
Oh, wow.
Bad day.
Well, I would probably do the opposite of what Barack Obama would be, and that would... Oh, that's right. He's not president anymore.
Just feels like sometimes.
This is a very difficult situation to analyze because you really don't know who the players are.
Right.
And even if they did know who the players were, I think the important question is, what's the trap that somebody is trying to set here?
Right.
Yeah.
This is about a conflict between two organizations that intended to do nothing more than have a fight. Ideologically, I have no idea where either one really stands. So I think my remarks on it, since I'm making remarks on it, I think they transcend what the subject was about. I want to know what was the fight about. What was the fight really about?
Right.
I mean, because everybody knew that this fight was supposed to be there. So if the police showed up in riot gear, there's a level of information. The backstory of this, I think, is much more important than what actually played out on the streets.
Agreed.
And, I think that one of the problems that elected officials have is they sometimes are a little too quick to comment. Just because you jump out ahead of something doesn't mean you're a leader. sometimes leaders wait to find out, okay, what exactly is going on here? In fact, more often than not, leaders wait to get reliable intelligence before they formulate a response. Now, quite frankly, I don't watch a whole lot of news media. I barely turn the television on. As I've said before, I live with newsmakers. I don't need to rely on news fakers. If I want to know what happened, I pick up the phone and I call the people that are involved. Now, that's not to say that I know the commander of the state police, but what I will say is that immediately the story struck me as a contrived event. But that's because I'm paying attention and I'm looking at some of the factors that are involved in it. The fact that you've got two organizations that immediately get into a violent clash and you've got police that are already equipped standing by. Where, on what planet does that really happen?
Well, and also the fact that both sides just happen to have bats and helmets and riot gear of their own in the trunk of their car just ready to go.
And they all match.
That just doesn't make sense.
I like that they all match.
They were showing up to rumble.
Absolutely.
So as has been developed, we now see the immediate narrative, far right wing. Okay, help me understand, what does that really mean? What it was is an event that was posed in order to try and establish what the far right wing is. They want to define the far right wing. There is no such thing in my mind. Because I look at things in a three-dimensional, I don't look at things linearly. I look at things in a three-dimensional battle space. And, you know, it's, I hate to put it in military terms, but that's exactly what we're facing. We are facing a battle that is a series of skirmishes in one place. And it's not just a physical battle going on between two groups. There's an ideological battle that's going on between folks who are in the are in the background. I mean, for the governor, is it Governor McAuliffe, I think is his name, for him to come out and make a statement, which clearly was prepared in time to make a statement, so that it appeared to be just in the moment and leadership, literally, I'm not buying it. Mm-hmm. I'm not buying it. He knew about that far in advance. And especially now if we learn that the police were told to stand down so that this could happen.
And how does President Trump stay out of the, you know, out of the blast
zone?
Well,
if he says anything, it's not going to be right. And if he stays quiet, it's not going to be right.
Yeah,
it's a lose-lose.
Quite frankly, I think the very first thing out of the gate, this is a matter for the state to deal with.
Yeah, there you go.
That's you know, I was taught this by a fairly liberal reporter in the first 3 weeks of my tenure as a representative. She's the one. She's the reporter who tells me this, by the way. Remember one thing. You are under no obligation to make a statement. And that's always stuck with me. First of all, if it's not my fight.
Yeah. Yep.
My remarks are, I need to know more before I make a comment.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. If it's,
I mean, that's just, wisdom sometimes is one of the most important qualities of a leader. Have some discernment. Understand what's really going on here. And you will almost never know that at the outset of the battle.
Yeah, and unfortunately they keep getting baited in, so somebody's going to have to be the grown up in the room and just say, all right, everybody, you know, radio silence.
Yeah, so you get this Mika and Joe, whoever they are, they're going
idiots.
To beat the drum hard about right wing
yes.
fascists, right wing. Okay. Just because you say it doesn't mean it's so. You're trying to define a group of people with your words, with your definition. What is your objective? And that's the thing that I would probably leave your audience with. Do not accept the media narrative. They right now believe that they own the battle space. Do not accept their definitions for people groups, for the reasons for an argument, for the reasons for a right. Do not accept it, because if they're telling you something you can almost bank that it's at least 90 degrees different, if not 100% the other direction.
Well, if nothing
something else is going on in the battle space, yeah. And you just got to remember that.
It's going to change. The first one to speak, I guarantee you, they're going to have to take their words back or alter what they're saying before it's all said mm-hmm. and done, because it's going to change.
Yeah,
yeah, there's a philosophy in negotiation. The first person to mention price loses.
Yep.
True.
Well, think about it. The first person to open the narrative up loses, because what they've done is they've established the standard in the ground by which they're going to have to live and die. So to come out and make a premature statement about something that isn't even your argument, you know, right now we're looking at something in Arizona. We've got six Confederate, so-called Confederate monuments in Arizona. I don't know when they were put here. I moved here in 1999, man. Okay. So are they monuments to people? Are they monuments to battles? What are they monuments to? And by the way, who made the motion to put them in place? I can just about guarantee you I know what political party they are. But because I want to keep my powder dry and speak from a position of fact, I'm still doing the research.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, if somebody wants to claim the moral high ground, they better be able to claim the moral high ground. Well, we will see this for what it is, and that's a contrived, manipulated, feigned outrage over something that you were responsible for in the first place.
Correct. But that goes back to what we were talking about last hour. Conservatives, by nature, are not taught to confront. They're taught to turn the other cheek. And so we don't control the narrative. We allow the other people to control it, and then we're always playing catch-up. I think... why don't we talk about race? Why don't we talk about the Civil War? But let's do it in such a fashion that we ask the Dems, quote-unquote the Dems, what was your participation? What have you done since the closure of the Civil War to promote healing? What have you done? What can you demonstrate to us that has worked? They can cite all sorts of legislation, but it hasn't worked. You take a look at the top six cities in America that are all run by Democrats, and they're in disheveal. They're absolutely bankrupt and totally in chaos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tell us how your programs have worked. Don't talk to us in glowing emotional terms. Talk to us factually. But we're not trained to do that because, again, conservatives are trained to be very polite, very respectful. The Dems, again, they don't have any rules except to gain power. So until that begins to change, I think we're going to be constantly playing catch-up. Trump, on the other hand, does demonstrate that he's willing to come out swinging, and that's very different than they're used to. They don't know how to deal with him. They don't know how to deal with somebody like him who does not fold very easily. My concern is that sometimes he is reactive, and like Representative Fincham was saying, a leader cannot be. A leader needs to be.
Not when your megaphone is that big.
But don't you find it fascinating, Lyle, that in the, what, 7-8 months he's been president, the media still hasn't figured him out. They still, he runs circles around them and pulls their strings at every turn. They still don't know how to read him or work with him.
Correct. And they've become victims of their own hubris. And I think Tucker Carlson just did a fabulous job, just did a 30-second comment here. This was a couple of months ago. He said, you know, it's interesting that for decades people have complained about electing somebody who doesn't do what they promise, and now we find ourselves complaining about somebody who's doing exactly what they said they would.
Mm-hmm.
How dare he?
Yeah, that's not
I mean, that is a capsule comment, and I think that I don't want to put myself on the same plane as Mr. Trump, but when it comes to loving this country and loving our republic, I don't care what happens to me. I care deeply about what happens to my state and the people that I represent. And I think that in that, Donald Trump is given a lot of forgiveness and grace by people, because I believe that they see him as a completely genuine man who has a love far greater than himself, and what his objectives are. His objectives are to make this, make America great again, to provide quality education, to provide quality infrastructure, to empower people to have personal freedom, economic security, debt-free future. Those, that's what the man lives for. He doesn't care about elections. He doesn't care about political intrigue. I think he's just kind of like the fact that he's a bull in a china shop.
Lots of that.
Mixing up the political elites that you're right. They're freaking out. They do not know how to manage this guy. Well, that's the whole point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They've gotten used to managing their president.
Yes, and we've seen those characters. We'll be right back in 2 minutes. Mark, do you have to leave?
I got to run, but God bless you. Keep up the good work.
Thanks. We didn't want to just give you radio silence. Thank you for joining us.
All right.
We'll be right back. We'll have 10 minutes. Lyle, it's all you. Gear up, buddy. We're going to end on a light note so everybody's not going to have to take blood pressure medication. That's good. Hey, Lyle, since you're it's all you, man. You got 5 minutes, huh? You're like, so finally!
This makes up for the 25 minutes you wouldn't put me through in the beginning of the show.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Okay. Yeah.
That was
you were totally censored.
That was Bob's executive decision.
It's not the first time, I tell you. I guess my check didn't clear, huh?
I'm all, hey, Lyle, use Skype. It'll be easier.
Wow. Don't give up your day job, Aaron.
Exactly. The singing is out. The radio's out. What the heck?
You guys are fun, and thank you.
Oh, we have to have fun. This is so distressing.
Yeah. I hope we did well. I hope we answered your questions. Some. I know every time we give you an answer, it opens up two or three more questions.
I know. That's just how it is, though. And so, you know what? In the last couple of minutes we have here, we really should hit the fourth thing, this Cher Blue outfit, because this is their, let's see, this is what they say in their playbook. Cher Blue will take back social media for Democrats. We will delegitimize Donald Trump's presidency by emboldening the opposition and empowering the majority of Americans who oppose him. We'll be the dynamic nucleus of a multi-platform media company that informs, engages, and arms Americans to fight. So this is the big online push, the Cher Blue guys. And they're looking at Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff.
Google. I mean, they're already.
You guys are right. Already they've begun to screen information on PayPal, YouTube, things of that nature, and they're already kicking people off. I don't know if you're aware of that, but they're literally removing individuals with a too conservative of a message or who are really pointing out what's taking place here. And so PayPal's doing the same thing. YouTube's doing it.
Google got in some trouble here not too long ago about the search engine, when you were looking for certain things, they were actually controlling the content that you would see and putting the conservative stuff at the bottom.
You're correct. So that's part of the game plan, is to begin to screen or mute positions that they can't control and will really reveal what's taking place here. You're going to see more of it. You're going to see more controlling of the narrative where conservative Americana, I'm trying to find adjectives, nationalism, patriotism, Judeo-Christian heritage, all that's going to be screened and muted, and their platform's going to come forward. So that's part of what Share Blue is going to do. Again, these four groups are working synergistically, and they're being funded by very powerful entities besides Soros.
Well, yeah, if you have any doubts about who they are, read this document. Go down. They did a good job of stating who the executives were and who the
and their background and their education level. These aren't
who they worked for, and you know who's actually controlling these companies, and that'll tell you where they're coming from right there.
And we will post the other playbook you said you're sending us, and those.
Yeah, would you please just give me a little bit of time today?
Yeah.
I have to partially paint a garage, my garage. So if I can have a few hours, but I will send you the other playbook. I will also send you the two police reports.
Okay.
Strike that. They're not reports. They're not full reports, but they are narratives demonstrating that law enforcement finally had had enough. They had taken it in the shorts, and you can have that and post that information.
Outstanding.
Well, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Yes, we'll have the commercial free up later and all those posts, and they'll all be online.
Super. Thank you guys so very much. Always good.
Hey, have fun in your garage. Because it sounds awesome, and it's 110 here, so I wish I was going to hang out in my garage.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Live the dream,
Lyle.
We'll
talk soon.
You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.